We try to do on Sunday nights, off and on, is cover some issues that are prevalent in the news and in the country, especially as it sometimes affects the church. And we're going to look at the subject of racism, since it's become more prevalent. You know, in fact, they got a standard quotation of somebody playing the race card. There's the standard handout, you know, that you've got, but I went through it, and then I went and took a nap, and all these stories, you know, come in and out, and, you know, as to, and my mind is, you know, grasping, you know, which do I want to cover, and which do I want to just let lay as to what's significant. So maybe I can just, you know, start going through this, and it'll come to me at the time. Racism embraces the beliefs that hereditary biology determines the difference between groups of people, that cultural differences are predetermined, immutable, and that the distinguishing social and cultural features of the subordinate group are inferior. So we're trying to look, basically, whatever you are, you feel everybody else is inferior. And that's the problem with nationality and race and everything else. We go on in the introduction that these, you know, false beliefs foster prejudice and discrimination. Now, I give you a little, you know, here, you know, something about our country. Perhaps bring in something. I think I covered a little bit before, because people, you know, rewrite history, and they go, you know, that our founding fathers were racist. From what I understand from some of the background history Hillsdale College puts out, and Professor Weiss has put out a book, you know, defending the founding fathers. And what he does is go back and research the papers and the times and what the people were struggling with, especially the issue that's involved. I mean, when people look at the Declaration of Independence and go, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, well, but they still had slaves. Probably people don't understand the monumental problem that they were dealing with. With the realization, you know, this new concept, which, by the way, they got from the scriptures, because they're saying these are God-given rights, you know, freedom and liberty and whatever. In fact, I want to trace it back as we look at, you know, slavery in this country, of where it started from. Probably the best thing to lay down is, if you look at any race of people, you're going to find some really nice people among it, some really smart people, and some real stinkers. And nobody's omitted from that analogy. And anytime anybody gives you a one-sided history of any race, whether good or bad, automatically discount it. Yeah. I know the, there's so many ways to start from this. Maybe just go back to, you know, perhaps the way the blacks are being steered, you know, in this country. In fact, it's almost, you know, because they don't know their history, they think Muslim is better than, or Islam is better than Christianity. And they couldn't be farther from the truth. I mean, if you start, you know, where did slaves come from to begin with? You know, in our country in the early days. It started in Africa with warring tribes, black against black. I used to work with an individual who came from South Africa, and he was a member of BOSS, the Bureau of Secret Services. He says one of their primary jobs was keeping the tribes off of one another. Even today, they still, you know, hate each other vehemently. And this is where, you know, it originated. You know, tribe took over tribe. They made slaves of them. And then they sold them to the Muslims. I mean, if you look at Africa, primarily, there's not a white man, you know, 200, 300 years ago that ever penetrated, you know, darkest Africa. And the closest nationalities to them were in the northern part of it, and that was all Muslim. Okay? And so they took it north, and the Muslim bought the slaves. And that's where we got the slave traders hit the northern coast of Africa and bought it from them. Now, slave trading is still going on in the Sudan and Chad and whatever. That's part of what the Muslims do. Okay, so it's, yeah, you can't say they're pristine in their relation. But when it gets over here, I mean, this is something that had been around for like hundreds of years. And it was property. You know, to own somebody. It wasn't just blacks. They had indentured servants and everything else who were white, Europeans that were trying to work their way out. And this is what our founding fathers had to face. Okay, now they suddenly, you know, with this idea that all men are created equal, how do you handle it? Okay, now, the liberal mind goes, well, just set everybody free. Okay, you have no idea what kind of complications that would do. Now, even our founding fathers struggled with this concept. They realized, yeah, it was right, you know, to set them free, but you know, how do you do this? Now, keep in mind that if you decide, okay, we're going to make everybody, there's a difference between being a citizen and being free. If you were declared a citizen of the United States now, that means you automatically got a gun. And there was a lot of mad blacks. You know, that didn't like being, you know, shipped off from Africa over here. So they tried to, I mean, you promise freedom, but you're also promised right of life. So yeah, we made a lot of enemies, now you're going to arm them. And they're going to start shooting people. So what they started coming up with is, there some way we can deal with this? And so they offered them a freedom. They offered them, in many cases, you know, it will subsidize you to head west in the new territories. Okay? Francis Scott Key got together, you know, money from Congress and everything, and they bought the country of Liberia for any black that wanted to go back and kind of basically set up their own country. You know, you don't hear this in the history books. Okay? So they're trying to work this out. And for a period of time, you know, people were on fire with the new concept. Manumission was going on. People were, landowners, slave owners, were voluntarily giving, you know, black slaves or indentured servants their freedom. In fact, during this period of time, about 50 years, you know, after the Constitution and everything, we didn't need an amendment to it. In fact, the records show that there were more blacks released in the South than in the North. You know, voluntarily. And so the founding fathers were going, okay, yeah, maybe it'll all work itself out. You know, it seems to be working itself out by itself. And you know, each one, you know, started to deal with it, you know, as they thought best. Washington on his deathbed, you know, had Martha go free all their slaves. And Washington was the richest man in the United States at the time because he married the richest woman in the United States at the time. Adams, he didn't quite want to release all of this value of his slaves, but his wife said, okay, you want to keep them, that's fine, but you pay them. Now, Jefferson had a little bit more logical approach to it. He was going to free his slaves, but he didn't want to free them until he'd taken the time to educate them and had them trade so when they get their freedom, you know, they're not just turned loose with nothing to do. He wanted them prepared for their freedom. So each one is trying to figure out this monumental problem. Okay? The trouble was, is that you know it seemed like it was working itself out, and then you get this period of time where men like Stephen Douglas were coming out and going, no, they're inherently slaves. Let's keep them. And it's starting to turn the tide of thought. And so Lincoln's argument was, if lighter skin makes one superior, then anyone with lighter skin than you should be your master. Okay? Logical conclusion. So anybody in here that's got lighter skin than me, hail to the chief. Okay. Or if greater intelligence or learning makes one superior than anyone smarter, more educated, with one IQ point higher than you is your master. You know, Lincoln was saying this doesn't make any sense. What Douglass is proposing, you know, is not logical. Now, after that, we started working things out. We have been working out the race problem. Okay, most people don't think about it, but we went to war on this. And from what I heard of the numbers, more men died, more Americans died in the Civil War fighting for other people's liberty than all the post-wars combined, World War I, II, whatever. So don't tell us that we're not concerned about people's freedom. Okay? We had problems with, you know, Indians, but, you know, the Spanish. You know, but it, there's like pro and con. It's the people you want to pick. You know, Andrew Jackson stabbed the Cherokee in the back. They supported him through the wars, and then he turned his back on him. Davy Crockett chewed him out to his face. Sam Houston married a Cherokee. Jim Bowie married a Spanish girl. A lot of people don't realize at the Alamo, there were Mexicans fighting for Texas independence. As for the noble red man, yeah, there were some noble red men. But before we got there, they were killing each other. And for the strangest reasons, too. You know, superstitious and everything else. Okay? You may think, you know, Cortez was bloody coming up through, you know, South America, trying to take over the Incas and the Mayans or whatever, and people forget that these civilizations, you know, sacrificed 500,000 virgins a year to the sun god. Okay? And someone wants, you know, show me a civilization, any culture, and I'll show you an incidence of cannibalism in it. Yeah. What you need to do is take each individual on their own. You know, forget about the race. There are incidents that will occur that will change your mind about anything. I had a man I was working with when I was over in Japan. We were sitting at the same electronics table. He was black. And we got to talking, and he told me about his background. He was a gang member. You know, all blacks except for one Chinese girl, you know, whatever. And they hated whites. And he's sitting there talking to a white guy, and he's telling you, yeah, we hated whites. I said, well, what changed your mind? He says, well, he was over in Vietnam, and they were under fire, and the chopper came in, and they were running to the chopper, and he got wounded. And one of his, you know, fellow soldiers, a white guy, lifting him up onto the up to the chopper, and took machine gun rounds in his back, and he died there on the spot. He says, I was looking down at this guy that just saved my life and thought, perhaps all white guys aren't bad. So sometimes, you know, it takes radical, you know, situations in order to change our mind. But again, it gets back to it. You know, you'll find whatever the race is, people that are, you know, exceptional in it, that have, you know, been good athletes, good scientists, you know, whatever. Anybody you want to pick, all through the ages. So, you know, where this is taking us, then, is the gospel went out to the whole world, and our compassion and endeavor to save souls should go out to the whole world as well. They didn't care in the first century who got saved. They were just concerned about their souls. Okay? And we have this, you know, the Ethiopian eunuch. And others. Now, the problem is, you know, this should be a problem of the world, but it's going to seep into the church. And you'll find this through history, in which way we have to fight against it. And then people will try to go to the scriptures to justify racism. Okay? So we're going to look at some misapplied verses. The curse upon Ham for laughing at his father Noah has been long propagated as a denouncement by God upon the black races. Now, you may never heard of this, but I had some long arguments with my mom about this. So it was prevalent at least 50 years ago. So they go to Genesis 9 and go, when Noah woke from his wine, he knew what his youngest son had done to him. Okay? So he said, curse be Canaan, a servant of servants he shall be to his brothers. Right? Well, first you will notice that the curse was upon Canaan. Now, try to, you know, check that out. Second, is very well be limited to only this one grandson. There's nothing says that the whole race, you know, or generations of Canaan would be affected. Third is, if it is upon a race, it's the Canaanites, and they're long dead. They were wiped out with the occupation of, you know, Palestine. Now, because the Israelites were not to intermarry with the Canaanites, it is believed that God is setting a standard of chosen people and that their race at least needed to be kept pure. So you go to Deuteronomy 7:3 and say, moreover, you shall not intermarry with them, you shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor shall you take your daughters and take their daughters to your sons. You know, keeping a pure race, you know, as a chosen, you know, people. Well, that ignores other passages, you know, around the same context. The purpose for this was not racial purity, it was religious purity. Trying to keep the idols of the people, you know, false gods from among the Israelites. Consider Deuteronomy 21, 10 through 14. If you go to war with a nation and basically you see this person of another race and you find her beautiful, okay, bring her in. Yeah. If she's willing, you know, give her time to mourn for the loss of her family or whatever, but you know, you treat her with dignity. And if she doesn't want any part of it, then you send her away, set her free, whatever. But it was okayed, this intermarriage. There's also this was also not to foster racism, for the Jew was also instructed to eat well the foreigner in his midst. Notice Deuteronomy 10:19. So show your love for the alien, for you were aliens at one time in the land of Egypt. When the Jews began to think of themselves as a special race among the nations because God brought them out of Egyptian bondage, took care of them, the prophets reminded them God had also shown the same favor to others. Notice Amos 9:7, God says, are you not as the sons of Ethiopia to me? And did I not bring the Philistines out of Kaphtor and the Arameans out of Kir? What he did for the Israelites, bringing them out of bondage, he did for two other races. Deuteronomy 7:16, for you are a holy people. You read through this. Yeah, God didn't choose the Israelites basically because they were the strongest or the smartest, the more spiritual or anything like that. Basically, he chose them because part of the promise he made to Abraham, and the other because they were the smallest country, amount of people in the world. That's why he chose them. God wanted to demonstrate his strength through them. You know, so he took them out, set them right in the middle of the most mightiest countries, Assyria to the north, Babylon to the east, Egypt to the west, and protected them to show them that he could. This is why he picked David, the runt of the litter, in order to go against Goliath and to make him a king of Israel. Historical facts. Assuming that any one race is meant to be slaves is historically inaccurate. Goes along. The word slave comes from the fact that the Slavs at one time were made slaves. And the Slavs were a white race. White slaves have been more predominant than any other race in history. The Roman world, conquering all, you know, the Mediterranean world, was 80% slaves. Most of the people we read about that time, Socrates, others, were slaves. Okay? All of them white, or most of them white. Okay? Between 1100 and 1400 AD in the Mediterranean, the Saracens, the Moors, and basically the Muslims had taken over. All through North Africa, into the eastern, the Levant of the Mediterranean, the Palestine area, the Holy Land, whatever, and we're moving up into Spain. Twice they tried to conquer Europe and were pushed back by the Franks. But these people own, at this period of time, they own the Mediterranean. And anybody, any European ship leaving Europe into the Mediterranean was pretty much seized, either by someone from the Ottoman Empire in Turkey or from the Barbarossas, the two brothers, Redbeards, that's what the word means, who'd set up shop in Algiers. And they were pirates. And they were attacking anybody on the Mediterranean. Some historians speculated the reason why Columbus got all the money in order to go to the New World is because they couldn't make any money in the Mediterranean. Sewed up by the Muslims. But anybody that was captured, all these Europeans and whites, were made slaves. Unless they had a phenomenal amount of money and then they were sold back to their families for ransom. But that's the trade that was going on. Okay? White slaves. Pure races, you know, this is from Dr. Elizabeth Toms, pure races do not exist as such. While many physical differences can be seen among various groups of peoples, one cannot make clear, precise distinctions on the basis of race. A combination of social, biological, environmental, political, and cultural factors make any group distinctive. But these factors are all essentially mutable. That means they can change. And they do. Try tracing your genealogy sometime. See where you came from. Don't be surprised. I traced mine back to the hills of North Carolina and the moonshiners and stuff like that, and I didn't want to go back any further. No telling what they were intermarrying with, animals and everything else. This is the course of, the world without God, can go through anything. So, be careful about what you latch onto. Recent DNA testing has shown that the Japanese are related to the Korean peoples. Okay, migration, Indians are probably related to the Chinese, the migration over the land bridge from Asia to America. We're all mixed, we intermarry, it's like who knows what's who what. But we can all trace our lineage back to Noah. Okay, anybody not related to Noah here? Okay. We're all cousins. So they tell you in Hawaii, we're all cousins. So, and before that, Noah was kind of a bottleneck. Genesis. Now, have you ever heard the argument that, look at the sons of Adam, they took wives. Here's Cain, he took a wife, whatever. Where did the wives come from? People began to speculate, God created other people besides Adam and Eve. No, he didn't. Genesis 3 and 20. Now the man, Adam, called his wife's name Eve because she's the mother of all the living. Everybody came from Eve. She just had a phenomenal gene pool. Now, get down to what God says about this. Whatever the world does, the church has to be different. James 2:1, my brethren, do not hold your faith in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism. I mean, that covers everything. Rich, poor, whatever culture, whatever race, whatever. God says no favoritism at all. Ephesians 2, and this is two contexts put together in Ephesians 2. This is what Jesus came to do. Notice, He himself is our peace who made both groups, that is Jew and Gentile. This is what Paul is talking about. He's writing the Ephesians. They're made up of both Jewish Christians and Gentile Christians. He goes, this is what Jesus came for, to make all races into one, really. And broke down the barrier of the dividing wall. Now, in the King James Version, that's the dividing wall is the same kind of terminology that was used by Josephus, describing the wall that was between the court of the Jews and the court of the Gentiles in the temple. And what Jesus came to do was, that's just illustrative, but basically kind of break down that wall so there's no longer a partition between Jews and Gentiles. He's bringing everyone into one body. By abolishing in his flesh the enmity, or the hatred, which is the law of commandments contained in ordinances, that in himself he might make the two into one man, thus establishing peace, by reconcile them both in one body to God through the cross, by it having put to death the enemy in enmity. And he came and preached peace to you who were far away and peace to those who were near. Far away were the Gentiles, those that were near were the Jews. That's what his purpose was in coming. Galatians 3:20, there's neither Jew nor Greek, bond nor free, male or female. As Christians, we're all one in Christ. Now, Acts 10, you know, we quoted this recently, but here's Peter. And he's having a hard time because, good Jewish man. The Jews, you didn't go into a Gentile's house. You didn't eat with them. In fact, even as the Jews were wanting to crucify Christ, they wouldn't go into Pilate's house because you just don't do that. They stood outside and raged at him. And so for Peter, he's trying, these are ingrained customs and ingrained feelings. And so God's going to have to give him a special revelation 3 times. Okay? Unclean animals, arise, Peter, kill and eat. He still doesn't understand what's going on here. He didn't understand. Here's Peter who gives the first gospel sermon. And he stands up and quotes Joel and going, I will pour my spirit on all nations. Still didn't get it. He just figured it was all, Jews from all these nations. It's not until he goes through that, through the visions, and the men from Cornelius come to get him, and he goes to Cornelius' house, and he goes, he has the epiphany. Opening his mouth, he said, I most certainly understand now that God is not one to show partiality. But in every nation, the man who fears him and does what is right is welcome. God could care less about our racism. Well, I shouldn't say care less. It probably burns him, to death. Infuriates him. His son died to make us all one. We're still trying to divide ourselves. What was read there? Okay. I'll leave this as the closing remarks. What Peter talks about, we'll each be judged according to each man's works by God, without partiality. Conduct yourselves then in fear during the time of your stay on earth. Believe me, when you're standing before the judgment seat of God, you're not going to worry about what color the guy is next to you. You're going to be so afraid that perhaps you won't be acceptable to God. But for the Christian, there are some things Christians should remember above all else about racism. Our Lord did not come to walk this earth as a white man. That's funny. Every picture you see of Jesus, he's white. Okay? If you go into a black church and you see statue of Jesus hanging on the cross, he's black. Each trying to identify with him. Historically, the fact is that Jesus died for all of his peoples as a dark-skinned, Semitic-raced Hebrew, probably darker than most Hebrews because he had a job working out in the sun. He was a carpenter, working in wood and masonry. That's what his father taught him. His spirit is colorless, and ours should be also. That's what we're looking at. The souls of men. That's the most precious part. The rest is incidental. Adaptability to climates and other things. Things that God has given us in order to be able to adapt to our environment, not use it to make our environment hostile. If you want to discuss this in private, I'd be happy to. it's one of the things that does occur and does affect the church is that cultures have a tendency to do these kind of things. Like I said, it looked like the American culture was starting off to go, catch an idea, and then it kind of reversed itself. And we've worked through that. And man, if any culture on earth seems to be unprejudiced, you'd think it'd be America. All races, play sports or whatever the ethnic background is. It's into sports, it's into movies, it's teaching in universities. culture in California, you know, big mixture of the Spanish. Los Angeles has had a black mayor. It's had a, you know, it has a Spanish mayor now. Our movie stars, you know, the richest woman probably in America is Oprah Winfrey, and everybody loves Oprah. You know? Major stars, you know, Denzel Washington, Wesley Snipes, Will Smith. You think, yeah, we're over this. But there's always someone to churn it up and saying, oh, we're racist and everything else. It's a lie for the most part, except maybe in certain areas, or if there's an agenda or something else. Okay? If somebody starts calling people racist, just ask them, define racism. Nail them to the wall. Okay? And then ask, how am I a racist? Okay? Don't accept it. It's something that needs to be squelched. Okay? And especially since we need to make inroads into all cultures as Christians. We need to be able, you know, I've gone and preached in Mexico, you know, Russia, India, whatever. As far as I can find, yeah, we're all the same. We're all the same. In fact, most of us would just like the politicians and the lawyers to go away. You know, the rest of us would get along just fine. But we need to remember it as a Christians, because we need to spread the gospel to all living creatures. We need to look at what is precious in each person, their soul, and work and labor in order to convert that back to God. That's his major interest, and it should be ours, yeah, with no barriers in between whatsoever. Okay? It's an invitation. If there's anything we need to do, you know, sit down and really look at this. If you like books on culture and history, be glad to share them with you. If you like to study the scriptures more about what's necessary in order to save your own soul as well as somebody else's, be happy to do that. If you're ready at this time to offer yourself to God in baptism to have your sins washed away, or perhaps, you know, you'd just like the prayers of the congregation, please let us know what your needs are as we stand to sing.